Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Driven Engineers podcast, where we explore the world of automotive and motorsport engineering through the stories of people who make it happen. I'm your host, Matt Honor, and today I'm joined by someone with a wealth of experience in the automotive industry. Our guest has built an impressive career, and his journey is one of passion, hard work, and pushing boundaries to deliver performance and results. Our guest played a key role in advancing the development of cutting-edge electric vehicles. He was responsible for overseeing the creation and integration of high-performance EV platforms, ensuring they met the highest standards of innovation and functionality. His leadership was instrumental in driving technological breakthroughs from system architecture to vehicle testing, helping NIO establish itself as a pioneer in the automotive industry. His work significantly contributed to NIO's reputation for delivering premium, high-performing electric vehicles in a rapidly evolving market. In today's episode, we'll talk about his career, the challenges he's faced, and his thoughts on where the industry is headed. Let's welcome to the show NIO's Chief Principal Engineer, Danilo Tilaboldi. Danilo, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting us along to the Oxford R&D headquarters. Pleasure to be here again. Thank you very much for inviting us along.
Our pleasure.
It's great being on site, seeing all the people that we've helped into seats at NIO over the years. So we're going to talk about your career, Danilo, and I'd like to start right at the beginning, really. What made you want to study mechanical engineering right at the start? Probably a long time ago now.
What made you want to
study mechanical engineering?
Right? Well, I was always interested more in mathematics and scientific topics in the school. Never really anything too much humanistic, like literature and stuff, right? So at the time was actually a decision between engineering and physics. But then by talking with friends, like usually happen, physics turned out to be very, obviously very academic, very theoretical, and with relatively less opportunity later on. So then I turned into mechanical engineering. So that was basically the driver for the decision.
So after university, Danilo, what was your first job in industry and how did that set the stage for your career?
Yeah, I started actually after the mandatory military service, because at the time still was the thing to complete. But yeah, then I've been recruited in Ital Design Giugiaro, and that came through, let's say, the selection right after university, basically, the usual, you know, interviews and attitudinal tests and so on. I started as a, I think it was something like team leader for exterior trim. So I started straight away into engineering. And yeah, it was at the time in the Italian automotive industry. It seems strange, but actually was one of the first loop of engineers coming from university into companies that were not that a big corporate like Fiat and so on, but you know, some sort of tier two level company like Ital Design, which is a service company for design, engineering, and so on. And we were a rather big group of engineers, young engineers that entered the company in different roles. And that was the start of a process that I think changed also the way the company worked.
That's great. You mentioned Ital Design there. What was it like working for them? They were a company known for its groundbreaking design.
No, certainly. After a few years, actually, I had the opportunity to move into the advanced engineering, advanced concepts, and work directly for Mr. Giugiaro, designer of the Century and so on. So it was extremely, on one side, obviously challenging and demanding. On the other side, extremely interesting, and the opportunity was to learn a lot, right? And you're a young engineer, you want to learn as much as you can, and that setup worked really well for me, because At the end, we were working with many different OEM, right? I had the opportunity to learn different solution to the same problem and different way of approaching the same problem, and then another problem, and then another one. And so I think if people have the opportunity to work for these service companies, they learn faster a multiple option of solutions. And that is beneficial for the rest of the career then, because you can always remember, oh, this maybe this solution is the best, and in the other way, the other solution can be the best, and so on. So it's very helpful to speed up, let's say, your learning curve.
That's really good. And can you tell us about some of the projects that you worked on while you were with Vital Design?
Oh, we literally had a variety of customers from, mini car for the Japanese market, mini car for European market, city car with Fiat and others, all the way to the, the really cool car like Ferrari, Lamborghini, and Maserati, and this. And probably the Maserati is still the one that I remember more, with more passion, not only for the brand, but also because we were cooperating, of course, with the concept team of the company. At the time, Ferrari, Maserati were together. And are people that I'm still in contact right now after 20-something years. And we are still very much in contact and exchange ideas and so on. So not only was interesting from a technical standpoint, but also, to be honest, also from a network standpoint. Brilliant. Right,
that's great that you're still in contact with those people.
Yes, so far down the line.
I guess there's kind of that comes on to our next question, really. Like, how did that role there prepare you for leadership positions? I suppose networking is part of it, and being a leader, having those contacts with industry is really important, but what else within that role laid the foundations for your career then onwards?
I think when I think back, right, and a couple of elements that the company were kind of unique, at least in the, because I was, again, a relatively young in the business engineer, but because of my role at the time was leading the concept team and so on, working directly with Giugiaro, I was called in every single presentation that Mr. Giugiaro was doing. And at his level, he was meeting basically with the CEO, president, chairmen, and so on. You know, the Montezemolo, the Winterkorn from Volkswagen, rather than, the big names at the time. Now, it's 15 to 20 years ago. So people, their roles have changed. And then I found myself at 29, 30 years old, having to present in front of these big names, right, that you might see on TV or read in the magazines and so on. And that helped to kind of, practice the way you would interact with certain people and so on. And that was also very helpful later on, and is helpful also in the way you approach maybe the next job interview or whatever. So, you try to learn from this kind of interaction and reapply when you have the opportunity.
That's great. And after Itel Design, you moved to Corus Auto in 2010. What inspired you to join Corus Auto and move to China?
Yeah, that was the technicality is that they were our customer in Itel Design, and then they approached me. And if you want to join, I discuss, of course, with Mr. Giugiaro. Obviously, working in company like Giugiaro, Itel Design has a lot of pros and some cons. The cons is that at the end of the day, it's a family-run business, and if you have an aspiration to do something more, and then of course you have limitation there. And they recognize that, so they didn't have any negative feeling for me trying something different and bigger and international, so to speak.
You went with his blessing then.
Yeah. But I prefer to do that, because I think it's in any work environment, if you live with with good feelings is never bad, right? There is no point of living with hard feelings, because then what do you get out of that? So it was basically the way it happened. And of course, yes, the main driver was an international experience, and the possibility, obviously, also for the family to relocate, and, you know, international schools and whatever. And professionally speaking, was really the challenge of a startup that wanted to do something new in a market that was at that time maybe a bit too early for the electric car, but still with some potential to new brand, because of course that in 2010 the automotive business in market in China was booming, and so there was the opportunity of a new brand. I particularly liked at that point the approach, because they wanted to do the right thing and in the right way, so to speak. It was at the time in China, you need to, you know, picture it like a sort of transition moment in which no car was really designed for in China, designed for and around the international standards. And we were proudly the first one, for example, developed in China, built in China, and achieved the 5-star Euro NCAP. And that, I think, is some sort of milestone for the entire Chinese market. Because from that moment, before us, when Chinese cars were tested, they were maximum scoring 3-star, 2-star, even 1-star sometimes. After that, it became something that even the Chinese market started to pay attention to that. And it created a domino effect in which that would become an entry ticket also for the Chinese market. So I can proudly say that probably Coros, one of the main legacy for Coros is this one.
That's right? Great. Yeah, that's great. That's brilliant. And I think you mentioned some of the biggest challenges that you faced going to China. A startup was always going to be a bit of a risk, and probably the communication. Any other challenges on the way?
No, it was of course was difficult, because the environment was very international, and Coros tried to pick talents from everywhere. Right, I mean, I was Italian, and people from Germany, from Sweden, from UK, from US, and everybody was coming with a background, and whereas we were a small group of us, not coming from an established OEM, and the perception of things were very different in an established OEM. Almost everybody was used to have somebody else to do the job, and their role is to check the job. I grown up doing the job for others. So I was, there was even tension somehow, sometimes, to how do we play, how do we execute, how do we work together, and so on, right? And I think it's something that Coros didn't solve, unfortunately, and it's one of the major difference with NIO when I then finally joined NIO. That was a very strong difference between the two. Both are startup, but they operate completely differently. So that was one of the main challenge for sure.
That's good, and that kind of brings me on to my next question, really. So, what excited you about joining NIO when it was just getting started? You were one of the very first. What number were you?
Yeah. Overall, number 44.
Number 44.
And in engineering, I think number 2 or 3, we basically enter at the same time through the door, and then one by one registering, so I might get a higher number. But and, you know, yeah, it was really the vision. So obviously by now you understand that I never really care and wanted to work in big corporates. I don't think they fit me, or I don't fit them. Mm-hmm. NEO was, and I think still is, something at that point. We are now in 2015. The market is different. The opportunity are there for electric car, but still not as much as clear as today. So back in 10 years ago was basically only Tesla, nothing else. And I had the opportunity. So one of my actual boss in Coros took a sabbatical. Then he came back. He told me about this new startup. He wanted me to join. We went for a interview, chat, and so on. At that point, I met Martin Leach, and was extremely inspirational guy, obviously. And I remember going to the office, a rented space in the middle of nowhere somehow. I entered the elevator together with a guy in jeans and t-shirt. Guy pressed the same floor. Okay, maybe it's another engineer, another employee going for the interview or something. And then they tell me in office, William is here, which is the founder, right? And do you want to say hello? I say, yeah, of course. And let's have a chat with the founder as well. And was the guy in the elevator, right? And he's a different thing. He's not an automotive executive with, you know, the suit and the tie and everything that back in the day was a mandatory uniform for the automotive executives. Was a guy, an entrepreneur in his jeans and t-shirt and so on. We are the same age in William and yeah, it was inspirational. What he wanted to achieve. And I remember above all what he really made me think is that he was focusing everything on building the company culture and the values and so on. At that point, even more important than a product itself. The company and the value of the company and so on was more important than the product itself. And that, as I said before, was completely different from the approach of Coros, right? And that made me feel that I sometimes take decision by instinct and intuition. And that time was also a decision by instinct. Okay, this guys make sense. This thing makes sense. Potentially we can make history. So I want to be part of it.
That's really good. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him, but he does come across as a really nice, down-to-earth character.
Yes.
From what I've seen on some of the videos. Talking about NEO's early days then, some of the original models like the ES8 and the ES6, what was your role in helping shape those early cars?
No, that was probably the time that I remember more fondly with in probably the career, because you rarely are involved in creating something from absolutely nothing, because not even the company was existing at the time. So I remember a lot of day and night workshops, sketching on the whiteboard rather than piece of papers, handmade drawings or whatever, just to also to communicate between us, because of course William is now he's an automotive guy, but before he was less of an automotive guy, and Martin Leach, of course, is one of the automotive geniuses, and so on. So to put everything together, it was very helpful to be very practical, and we built it, foam models and foam box to sit. You would sit like this. This would be your space. This noise is not enough. Longer cars, shorter cars. So that it was really, really, really from the very, very, very baby step. And it never happened before in my career. Even if in Ital Design, we were creating concepts, but obviously we were creating together with an OEM.
Sure.
So there was some sort of pre-existing foundation. For us, nothing was existing. So that was extremely rewarding at the end. See the car in the street and say, wow, in 3 years we managed to have it for real. and selling, and so that was really, really rewarding.
That's great. That's great. And what would you say were some of the most exciting projects you worked on for Neo? And those early cars, obviously, you remember those being the first ones, and seeing them on the road is great. Are there any other projects that really stand out to you as well?
Well, I think after that, we had very fast iteration of technologies, and therefore in the second loop, we had to reinvent most of the systems, and we went through, reselecting certain technology. But is in the third generation that we are about to launch. It has already been presented, but we are about to deliver to the users early next year. And this is the third technology loop. And we've been working technologies like steer-by-wire, active suspension, that are at the moment, at the upper level of the technological advancement in automotive. Right, there are not so many solutions on the market yet on those technology. And again, this is extremely exciting because you have, of course, many challenges. But with the right team, you approach, every step and so on, with the right methodology, and at the end, again, we are very, very near the finish line, and I can't wait to see them again in the market with those technology, which again I would say I and the team contributed to that, and this is always very rewarding.
That's great. That's really good. How do you adapt Neo's cars to different markets? I don't expect you to give away your secrets too much, but obviously there are some challenges with what car you release in Europe and what car you release in China. Can you just give us a little bit of what the insights are around that?
So the overall, architecture, the overall structural development, and the overall selection of the systems is pretty much in common. The main difference is linked to how the user are using then your car. And there is no more difference in safety perspective by now. Even if you would just develop for China, purely for China, they have China NCAP and they have another protocol, CISI, which is China NCAP is following more the European kind of legislation and Euro NCAP kind of test. The other protocol is following the IIHS, which is the US part. So effectively, when you develop for those, you are basically 99% cover both for Europe and US in terms of safety, or at least the passive safety side. Mm-hmm. I think Europe is at the moment still prioritizing the joy to drive and handling and so on, while in China they are transitioning more and more towards being, even if you are in the driver's seat, you want to be a passenger. And so it's very much into AD and this autonomous driving feature all the way to the city drive. And because they want to be a passenger, then there is a lot more importance given to the infotainment, which is another big differentiation. At the point in which now in the Chinese market is relevant as a buying factor, is relevant which chipset you have in your car.
Really?
And this is something that in Europe I never heard before. That somebody enter a dealer to say which chipset you have in the car, right? And so like, okay. So I think the two markets are diverging. So it will be even more and more challenging, to be honest, to build a 90% same car and 10% adaptation.
Sure.
It will be more into a 50-50 maybe or something like that, but it's very complicated. It's becoming more and more complicated.
Yeah. So as principal chief engineer, what's your main focus right now?
Well, right now I'm basically focusing on all the technologies, and I don't have any more the people management responsibility that I used to have with when I was a vice president. And so I can focus purely on the technological progress, and both in an advanced phase and all the way to, for certain technologies that are particularly strategic, I would say, then, yeah, of course, I follow all the way through the release in the market, right? So it's a very much technical job, and I love it because it's somehow more more black and white, if I can say that. So yeah, these are my responsibilities.
That's great. So we're obviously at the hub in Oxfordshire. What role do the team here play in helping develop Neo's cars?
So the Oxford team is was born as a center for advanced engineering, for again scouting all the new technology that are coming up, and then setting some foundation. It has been evolving into this part is still here, and on top we have added some platform level advanced engineering. So if we are in a certain generation in Shanghai for the serial development, Oxford might start the next generation, right? And again, it's a matter of aligning on which technologies to use and so on. I always refer to the job like you know, using the example of a restaurant. If you don't decide what you want to cook, you don't know which ingredient you need, and the system level are basically the ingredients, and then there is an integration level, which is putting the ingredients together, this much of salt, this much of oil, boiled for that long, blah blah blah, so the final dish is the one that you really want. And this phase, this planning, technology planning phase, need to be done way in advance. Because then once you have your vision very clear, then you can run fast. And this is something that is predominantly located here in Oxford. And then, because of course you cannot just have a vision painted in the sky, you want to have your feet on the ground. We have also a very strong CAE team, which again start with the early phase simulations, so we can build confidence into the visions that we have. So these are the main roles.
That's great. It's a really good analogy when you use the food term.
Yeah,
I've never actually thought of it like that. How do you encourage creativity and new ideas?
In Neo, I think we are very open, to be honest. It's been an open environment since day one, as the example, right, of William and Martin Leach and so on. So we always been very open for ideas. And so it can be a top-down, so to speak, in which, because of, you know, whatever reason, technology are required from the top, but very much sometimes are just originated from the bottom. And we allow this to happen. We allow failure, so to speak, because obviously we can, you must put this into consideration when you try an idea. It might fail. Important, of course, is not to insist too long. If you see that this is actually going nowhere, then of course you can direct somewhere else. And is very much into our way of working since day one, which is based on vision, action, and upgrade. So you have a vision, you put your vision in action. If you see it doesn't work, you try to steer and restart a next loop. We have a very much of a 30-day, 90-day kind of approach, right? We achieve that, it's promising, let's move on. And this is helping us to study maybe more than one solution, again, to the same problem, and then pick at a certain point and run toward, because we are fairly sure that the solution is the one that will fly at the end.
That's great. One of the things that's always amazed me about NIO is the battery swap technology. It still really amazes me how the car can back itself into a station and, yeah. and the battery is removed. I imagine there's been a serious amount of hours gone into that technology and the engineering behind it. It's got a couple of USPs in the battery swap technology. My children particularly love the NOMI as well, the dashboard.
Yes, NOMI. Yes.
How else can they continue to stand out in the current market?
Yeah, that's a very tricky question because unfortunately we are in a environment which is extremely competitive and now for the battery swap I think we still have the advantage but also we are opening that to others. There are cooperation ongoing with different OEM to use the same system and so on. Finally, the OEM and the market already understood the advantage, and we recently completed the swap number 60 million wow. worldwide. And so, yeah, that technology, I think, will stay as a differentiator for quite a long. The other technology, unfortunately, you have an edge over competition, probably 6 months to 1 year. The competition, especially in China, is becoming that intense. I mentioned before steer-by-wire and active suspension, and we know for sure that other OEM have started their own development on the same technologies immediately after the information that we were doing it became public. And therefore, yes, we will have an edge of 6 months to 1 year to claim this is the only car with this technology. And then, yes, we need to. That's why also planning become important, because then is what is the next phase? What will be the true differentiator in the next phase? Where do we claim that this is the first in the market or the first in the world or whatever? Because NIO stands for technology pioneers and, you know, to be on the top of the game. So we will need to find this technology in a fairly fast iterative world.
Sure. Yeah, sure. When you think about your career, what would you like your legacy to be? When you kind of look back and you eventually retire, what would you like to kind of go, that was the most momentous part of my career?
So, yeah. When I think about this, to be honest, what came to mind is our people, not so much the products. And I want to leave a layer of technical managers, not just managers, mm-hmm. but, you know, chief engineers that can continue the journey and so on. I am particularly proud because when I started as a director of vehicle integration, we had to create a team. Mm-hmm. And so we started recruiting in, the vehicle dynamic responsible, safety responsible, NVH responsible, and so on. And the big majority of them are still with NIO, with me, in the same team. And we are growing together. Mm-hmm. So when I become vice president, they became then the director of integration, director of concept, director of this, and so on. So we are growing together. And this is actually, I like the idea of, leaving a generation of people that can continue actually what we're doing, and they will bring their own flavor and so on. So I'm happy to mentor them and coach them and so on, because people are the biggest assets for a company at the end of the day. So if I can leave a generation of people that can continue a job, I think then I can retire.
That's great. we were talking earlier as well about you have an initiative called Sparks.
Yeah.
So you encourage almost like graduates or fresh from university, and you encourage people to join NIO. Could you just tell us a little bit more about that and why you're encouraging that at the moment?
No, yeah, it's an idea that came out years ago, almost at the very beginning, to be honest. And it's essentially, as you said, making sure that we have the possibility to tap into the most prestigious universities when it comes to engineering and so on. And then meet the people, fresh graduates, interview them, see if there is, you know, interest from their side, from our side, and then build a sort of special lane, so to speak, where if they can confirm the talent, then they have the opportunity to grow with us in terms of career, responsibilities, and so on. We are involved heavily into the Formula E for students, right? The Formula students with the universities and so on. This has been also a very big pool where we could meet and, yes, get to know these talents. And then the program HR then designed program to make them grow in the company according to the value systems and everything else, and we keep them fairly busy for their engineering work. So I think it's a good initiative so far, very successful.
Good, that's great. Can I ask why was Oxfordshire chosen for NEO's engineering team?
It's a sort of heritage and consequence of having the Formula E team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know better than me. This area is full of racing company at many different levels, from the Formula One team all the way to, you know, more junior leagues and everything. So was the base for the Formula E, and then we started to build up the serial development or concept phase for road legal car. and then I think one of the advantages that you can pick from many different companies, which is not just the traditional big OEM, but also racing company or special vehicle companies or technology companies, of course, because there is also a lot of technology going on. So you can diversify, and I think it's the right thing to do.
That's good. The car industry has changed quite a lot since you started, especially with kind of the rise of electric vehicles. And you mentioned technology earlier on, and I've no doubt that AI is going to have a part to play at some point as well. What do you think's next? Where do you see the car industry going? And what do you think we're going to be seeing in the next kind of 10, 15 years?
This is another very complicated one, because I think I go back to the differentiation between Europe and China. No? China is by far the first market in terms of sales and volume, and they are now embracing EV at a speed of more than 50% every month in terms of penetration rate. In Europe, we are probably around 10-ish, and then, of course, there are peak in Norway and this kind of country, and they are very low valley, for example, in Italy or in other countries. That is a major differentiation. There is, of course, all the debates on what role has been played by the EV for the crisis of the Western OEM. In China, I think the train has left the station, so you need to be there, no discussion. The way people are using the car is dramatically changing because it's electric and because it's connected and because it's autonomous. And then AI is a facilitator, is a tool, to be honest, at this point. It's a tool for, I would say, more for engineers than for the user at this point, but the application for the user, of course, are the same that you might have on your phone or on your laptop and so on. But for us, it's becoming really important, all these AI engines, to speed up and refine the way we tune the car, we calibrate the car, we use the data, learning and AD based on an iterative model rather than on rules. So it's behavioral AD, right, rather than rule-based AD. And are all technologies that are unlocking the possibility of extending this experience. Rule-based AD would not probably know how to drive in a city like Shanghai. Mm-hmm. A behavioral-based AD can navigate through because it will try to mimic what a normal user would do.
Sure. Right?
A rule-based, it would just go crazy because if we had too many conflicting requirements and procedure to follow. And those are, again, tools that help the engineers and the company to then deliver better and better experience to the final users at the end. I don't see another big revolution in the near future. Like, you know, 10 years is a relatively short future for automotive.
Sure.
But the big names, so EV, connected, and autonomous are still the way to go. And there is a long way to go in terms of technology there. But normally, I cannot say everybody, but the huge, in China, everybody started to drive electric, they don't go back because they can use the car for infinitive other way that before was not possible. And in Europe, I think a bit slower, but yes, we will eventually get there.
That's great. That's really good. We're almost done, Danilo. I always like to finish on this question. A lot of people that listen to this podcast are people that are trying to break into engineering. They could be university graduates. They might be applying for the first roles in engineering. What advice would you give to young engineers who want to follow a similar career path to yourself?
Well, I believe that, especially at the beginning, people should not be in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's better to, you know, maybe there is a job that offers you a position and a role, but then you find yourself doing paperwork or, you know, something that is not that meaningful and will not help you to learn. And then you have another company in which you end up learning a lot, and that's the best way to then proceed further. So I think to choose company that, especially at the beginning, allow you to open your experience as much as possible. Then you can be a vertical guy that want to go in the, you know, deepest detail of certain technology, that's fair. Or maybe a more horizontal guy in which you want to explore more of the different technologies, different solutions, and so on. Either way, especially at the beginning, companies that allow you to learn and grow and build your, you know, your experience, because then you build on top and you resell it, and you know, your career will likely be faster and more meaningful at the end of the day.
It's really good advice. We're pretty much done there. Again, thank you so much for allowing us to come into the
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know how busy you are. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.